go home after that, couldn't we? I mean, what a great message. Yeah, you're ready. We just got back and you're ready to go. You know, tomorrow doesn't have to be the way things are. And that's a really, really powerful message from the kid president. And that's kind of what we're looking at as we start this new series called The 180 Experience. How do we change our perspective? Not just resolutions, those get broken, but creating that revolution that really, you know, creates a different trajectory for us. And so we're excited you're here today. Happy New Year, by the way. We're like the 11th of the month, and I always have this problem. I don't know when to stop saying it. Do you say it in February? Is it still close enough? But this is the first time I've seen you, so Happy New Year. My name is Kurt, by the way. If we haven't had the chance to meet, really excited that you're here with us today. And as we kick off this 180 experience, let's just take a moment and invite God into this moment. So let's pray together. God, we thank you. We gather in this room. We can spend a little over an hour in a dark room. Lots of other places we could be today. And yet, it doesn't really matter our spiritual background, spiritual orientation, you know, whether we've known you for years or we're just beginning to explore you for the very first time. For the amazing things you do, what you meet is exactly where we are. And God, as we start this new year, it's always a time when we're looking forward. For some of us, we've had an awesome new year. Everything's been going our way, and yet for others of us, nothing has gone the way we expected. And even in that, God, you made us exactly where we are. And so, God, I just pray today that you would help us to see maybe that one thing, to be able to identify that one thing, that we need a handle on that one thing, how our lives could be in an entirely different place. So, God, I just pray that you speak to us, do what only you can do in these next few moments. Well, today, I want to kind of help us think through the new year together, and not necessarily anything specific today, but something specific to you. There's a lot of things that you could do in this upcoming year, there's a lot of things you will do, but for every single one of us, there's one thing that we have to do. And I don't know what that one thing is. That one thing's different for every single one of us. And it's going to be based on, you know, the state of your relationships in your life. Might be in the state of your marriage right now, or your financial position, or, you know, where you're at with your vocation, or how you're parenting with your kids. I don't know what that one thing is. But I know for every single one of us, there's one thing that if we were to get a handle on this today, you know, we could look back in 12 months from now, we'll be like, man, you know, I am so glad I made that decision to get after that one thing because my life's in an entirely different place. Listen, for some of us, 6 months from now, our lives could be in an entirely different place if we focused in on this one thing. And so today, this is not going to be new information for any of us, all right? This is something you've thought about. This is something that likely somebody has suggested to you. It might be even something you've tried before, but maybe somewhere along the way, you've lost traction. Maybe somewhere along the way, you've lost focus. You got distracted. And that one thing, that we know we need to resolve, we know we need to get after, has just kind of got put in the backside of our mind. And so, you know, I'm going to throw out a whole bunch of suggestions today, and then we're going to look at a really cool Old Testament story that's had a profound effect on me and changing my perspective of how I lead, of how I parent, of my role as a father, as a husband, as a boss, and all the aspects of my life. And so this one thing, what could that be? I mean, for some of us, it might be a habit, all right? And there might be a habit that we need to break. And if you have a habit you need to break, listen, I don't need to tell you what that is. You know what that is. All right, you know exactly what that thing is, and if there was a magic button that you could push, and you knew that that would transport you to 12 months from now, and 12 months from now you look back and say, man, I got that thing out of my life, that I'm no longer dealing with whatever that thing is, then I have a feeling most of us today would push that button, because we want to be past this habit that's just kind of ruling our life. You know, it could be a goal that we have that we just haven't gotten after. It could be a project that just needs to get completed this year. It's been lingering. Maybe it's a business plan. Maybe, you know, it's something I know that will take my company up into the ride. You know, whatever it might be, I know that this is the year I've got to make this my main thing. You know, for some of us, it might be a relationship. You know, my relationships, man, they get so emotional. And you know there's a relationship that needs to be restored, for instance. And you're like, you know, I just need to pick up the phone. I need to schedule that lunch appointment to get together with my sister-in-law or my neighbor, whoever it might be. And the moment you decide to do that, it's like there's 10 other things that seem a lot more exciting than calling that person. So we put it aside because it's so hard to restore relationships. It might be a relationship that needs to end. All right, let's be honest. There are certain relationships in our life. Some of us might be in a dating relationship right now. That, you know, if you knew that you could push a button, a magic button, and there would be no emotional shrapnel, there'd be no collateral damage emotionally, if you could push a button supernaturally, somehow that relationship would just come to an end, you would likely say, I'm going to push that button. You know, maybe it's a debt Maybe there's something financial that you know you just need to get past. And, you know, every time we talk about money here at Cross Point, you're like, man, I got to get after this thing. You know, every time you hear Dave Ramsey on the radio, you're like, oh, I got to get after this thing. You see that financial consolidation commercial. You're like, I'm going to make the phone call today. And then all of a sudden you get distracted and you put it off. And listen, and then it happens to the best of us. I mean, some of us, we come in here and get all happy clappy in church. We feel like getting happy clappy, praising Jesus. And, you know, we love all that. We're excited about that. And yet, you know, we have this religious experience every time we talk about our debt because we're like, man, I need to make a change. And I get all, you know, I'm going to do this when I get home. I'm going to make that call. I'm going to meet with that financial counselor. And then we go home and we don't do anything about it. And we're in, and listen, imagine how different your relationships could be if you would actually, you know, get rid of that stupid debt. Well, just imagine how much better your life could be 12 months from now if you aren't carrying that debt. And so this is kind of my list right here, some of the top five things that I think probably we all, at least most of us, would connect with. You might be saying, Kurt, my thing is not on that list. Listen, I don't know what your thing is. But I know that if I were to sit down with you this week, have a cup of coffee, and I said, hey, what's one thing you'd like to change in your life this year? It wouldn't take long for every single one of us to figure out and say, you know, here's the thing that's just hanging over me. Whether it's a project or an initiative I need to take or a habit or a debt, whatever it might be. And so for the next 26 minutes, I want to kind of tell you a story from the Old Testament. And I'm praying, again, my prayer has been going into this morning, is that as I tell you this story, that your one thing will come to your mind and you'll get very clear on what it is you need to get after this year. And some of you already are, it's already on the front of your mind. You knew your thing before you came today. Some of you are like, I got four things. I got six things. Kirk, we got after six things, just one thing. I want us to focus in on one thing and then say, if I dealt with this one thing this year, you know, this thing that I know I need to have, this thing I know I need to get past, this thing I know I need to accomplish, that I know my life would be in a better place. Now, what's interesting about these topics that we just had on the screen, some of you look at those and you're like, Kurt, those aren't really church things. All right? And in fact, you wouldn't even classify those as spiritual things, and yet what's fascinating about them is they have incredible impact on our relationship with God and our relationship with others, which means they are spiritual things. It means that, you know, these things are things that we need to tackle because they impact all of our life. And like I said, sometimes we come in here, we sit in seats every week, and we get all excited, we sing, and, you know, go through motions. And yet, the fundamental things in our lives that need to change, we sit here, and we look over the things that can make a huge, huge difference. So let me set this story up for you. I love this story. It's a story that when Cross Point was kind of in the conception stage, in the early formative years before, you know, any service ever happened, this story was kind of, you know, working in my life. And Cross Point story kind of came out of this passage. And there's one verse in this passage that I, you know, is probably, if not the most important, close to the most important verse in my life. It's really shaped who I am as a leader, the way I process decisions, how I am as a husband, as a father. And so let me tell you the story of Nehemiah. As I tell this to you, I want to kind of lead you to this one verse. I'm going to tell you the story. I want to lead you to this one verse. And then I want to kind of teach the verse. And then I just am going to trust that God will help you process how to make your focus on that one thing this year. So the story of Nehemiah happens back in around 444 B.C., a long, long time ago, way before Jesus was ever on the scene. There was a king by the name of King Artaxerxes. You maybe remember him from, like, world history. And he was a big player on the world stage. He was the king of Persia, which was kind of the dominant world power at the time. And Artaxerxes, we could call him an emperor because he was the ruler of Persia. And if you grew up in church, you remember hearing about this guy named Nehemiah who was a cupbearer. For King Artaxerxes. Now, a cupbearer is just a simple way of saying he's a wine taster. So basically, he would taste the wine before it would go to the king, and if Nehemiah died because there was poison in it, then it basically didn't make it to the king. So, you know, you get one shot at your job. You know, you fail once, and you're out. And so, but he was more than a cupbearer. He was a friend. He was a confidant. He was also a Jewish man. And we don't know if he ever had the privilege of going back to Israel, where his family originated from the town of Jerusalem. Because about 100 years earlier, the Babylonians, who were kind of the big dog on the world stage at that point, had kind of went in and demolished the city of Jerusalem. They conquered it, tore down the walls, and that was in the time of, like, King Nebuchadnezzar. Again, if you are a Bible reader, you remember, like, guys like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and remember hearing those stories, a guy by the name of Daniel. Well, 100 years later, Nehemiah is working for King Artaxerxes I, And he gets this burden for his city that he originated in, even though we don't think he'd ever been there before, the city called Jerusalem. And he does something very, very risky. He goes to the king, and he's a Jewish man. He goes to the king, he says, "Oh, king." And he prayed, before he did that, he prayed this big prayer. That's always a good idea. Pray a big prayer before you go make a big request. So he prays this big prayer, and you can find that in Nehemiah chapter 1. If you go to the ancient document in the Old Testament, the Bible, Nehemiah chapter 1, is this long prayer that he prayed. And he basically says, King, look at the condition of my homeland. He's like, it's in shambles. I mean, you know, will you give me some time off so I can go back and apply some leadership there, create some organization, and restore the city of Jerusalem back to a place that has some dignity? Now, the reason that was a risky request is because, you see, Nehemiah was not an employee of King Artaxerxes. He was a slave. Slaves did not get days off, all right? So he's kind of like, hey, do you mind giving me a slot of time that I can go back and restore my city? And you know what King Artaxerxes says? He says, I'm going to do you one better than that. He says, I'm actually going to make you the governor of Judea, which is kind of like being the mayor of Jerusalem. And he says, there's only one condition. The one condition is you can't stay there. You can go back and restore the city. When you're done, I want you to come back and be a part of my kingdom. So, of course, Nehemiah, I mean, he's like all excited about this. He goes out and starts raising funds. He starts gathering wood and building materials and supplies. And he makes his way to the city of Jerusalem that laid in shambles, where the walls for 100 years have been knocked down. And this is kind of where it's hard for us to wrap our minds around this. Because, you see, the people living in Jerusalem at the time, the people there at that particular time had never known Jerusalem when the walls were standing. All they knew were the walls being torn down, the city being in disarray. All they knew were the gates being torn down, and people could come and go as they pleased. People could come and pillage and steal from them. And that's exactly what took place. These warlords kind of ruled the area of Judea, and they'd go into Jerusalem, and they'd steal crops from the people that lived there, their possessions. There was nothing to stop them. And so this entire city, there was no walls. You know, this entire city kind of lost its national self-esteem. And if you know anything about the history of Israel, you know, the nation of Israel is kind of God's chosen people. And here in the city of Jerusalem, where Israel was supposed to be living, it's like they lost this sense that God was with us. And so Nehemiah sees this, and it just breaks his heart. I mean, it breaks his heart. In fact, so much so, the day he arrives, he goes out and kind of walks through the community. It takes about a day, and he just talks with people. He hears their stories. And as he's hearing these stories, he comes to this one conclusion. He says, if there's nothing else that I do while I'm here, I've got to get the wall rebuilt around the city. He says, if there's nothing else that I accomplish. And he's like, there's a lot to do. I mean, there's an economy that needs to be propped up. There's a lot of leadership that needs to be applied. There's all kinds of problems here. But if there's nothing else that I have the opportunity to accomplish, the one thing I have to do is I have to rebuild the walls around the city. The city needs it. The people need it for protection. They need to have their dignity restored. All they know is living in a place that's destroyed. He says, I've got to rebuild the walls. So here's what Nehemiah does. He goes out into the city. And he basically begins to call everyone in the city together. He goes out to the far reaches of the region. He invites everyone in, and he begins to cast this captivating vision for the city of Jerusalem. And this is really cool, because if you're not a Christian or you're not a Bible reader, you're just kind of checking church out, man, I'm so excited you're here this morning. But let me tell you what, this is one of those cool moments that if you're not a Bible reader, I would challenge you to go read Nehemiah 1-6 this week. In fact, it's on the back of your connection card. We have next steps every week, and one of these is reading Nehemiah 1-6. Just go read the first six chapters of this ancient document called Nehemiah. And the other day, there's no miracles in there. All right, if that freaks you out, Jesus isn't on the scene, if that's an issue for you. This is just a book of amazing, amazing leadership of this leader who cast this compelling vision. And for me, about 8 years ago, I was captured by this vision. In fact, I've modeled after Nehemiah's vision. Every time we have to make a change here at Crosspoint, I model our change process after what he does here. You see, he calls people together and says, hey, there's a problem. And then he says, this problem's so bad that we need to do something about it now, and you're a part of the solution, and they go and get it done. That's what he does. He casts this amazing vision, and it actually happens. They actually begin to rebuild the wall right here. And so building the wall around Jerusalem was a huge, huge task. I mean, it involved everybody in that area to be involved. And so, as they begin this process, they begin to make progress. The walls slowly begin to come up. And as the walls begin to be rebuilt, The surrounding areas begin to kind of take a lure on this. They kind of begin to get upset about this. They're like, oh, there goes our economy. I mean, Jerusalem's getting back to the way Jerusalem used to be. So our economy's going to go to shambles because, you know, we can't go in there and charge these people high interest rates like we were when there was nobody doing business within the city. And you know, somebody else is like, oh, man, there goes you know, our freedom because we can't go and pillage through and steal things from people because the walls are going to keep us out. And then even some of the emperors in the surrounding regions began to realize that, man, if Jerusalem's walls get built back up, then they're going to become a powerhouse. They're going to develop an army. They're going to a hedge of protection around the city, and they're going to be a key player on the world stage. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And so all the surrounding regions began to be threatened by what was taking place on the wall in Jerusalem. And one of the leaders, one of those kind of opposition leaders in the region that noticed what was taking place was a guy by the name of Sanballat. Now, what kind of name is Sanballat? Definitely not wanting to name your son that if you have a son in the next few months. Maybe a name for your dog. I don't even know if I'd go that far. But Sanballat had a lot of influence in the region. He led an area just, not too far away, stone's throw away from the area of Jerusalem. And he basically said, hey, we've got to stop the rebuilding of this wall. And so he sends spies in to begin to spy on what's going on. He begins to start some rumors. And he begins to infiltrate the people who are living in Jerusalem. He sent armed forces in because he noticed that wasn't working. They're trying to pick off the guys actually doing the work on the wall, which created all kinds of problems for Nehemiah. Because Nehemiah actually had to go in and like take people who were working on the wall, pull them down, and put them in like as like guardsmen to guard the people who were still on the wall doing the work. And so while this happened, while all of these distractions were happening, the wall continued to be built. And it was getting higher and higher. And the gates to the city, which had been destroyed over 100 years ago, were about to be restored. And so Sanballat realizes, he's like, man, this is not working. And so he's like, I got to try a different strategy. And so he thought, you know, if I can get Nehemiah outside the city, and I can get him outside these walls, which are now beginning to protect Jerusalem, then we can kill him. And if I kill him, then the people are going to lose the vision for rebuilding the walls, are going to lose the momentum, and everything's back to the way it was. And so that's exactly what happened. In Nehemiah chapter 6, we find this encounter between Sanballat and Nehemiah. And we see Nehemiah Sanballat trying to distract Nehemiah. And this is the part of the story where we bump into this verse that's had, you know, a huge change in my perspective and what it means for me to be a leader. It really changed my life. So here we go, Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 1. It says, now when it was reported to Sanballat, there's our guy right there we've been talking about, Tobiah and Geshem, the Arab and the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall and that no breach, a breach meaning like no low point, basically they restored the wall, there was no weak points in the wall any longer. He says, after that had been reported and there was no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not set up the doors and the gates, then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying. And so this message comes from Sanballat to Nehemiah, and Sanballat really is kind of like, hey, what we've been doing is not working. We've got to stop the building of this wall. And so here's what he does. Sanballat writes a letter and gives it to a messenger. And this messenger basically comes up to Nehemiah and rattles his ladder while he's up on the wall. And he's like, Nehemiah, Sanballat, your enemy out here, just sent you a letter. And so here's what the letter said. It said, come, let us meet together. He's like, hey, let's have some lunch together. Let's go out and have some dinner, maybe a cup of coffee. And he says, let's meet together at Seraphim. Basically, that was like a word for a village out in this plain of Ono. But here's what Nehemiah says. It says that they were planning to harm me. And so he gets this letter, and he opens this letter up, and this letter's like, hey, let's go out and spend some time together. And he realizes that the whole purpose of calling him out to meet was to harm him. And so Nehemiah says in verse 3, so I sent messengers to him saying, see, Nehemiah sent messengers back to him saying this phrase that I really want us, this verse that I really want us to bump up to now. And now this is the verse that I think will help change our perspective as we look at this one thing. And this is something you can apply to your parenting. This is something you can apply to your business, to your career, to your vocation, to, you know, your marriage, whatever it might be. Right? Here's what he says. He says, I am doing a great work and I cannot come. He says to Sanballat, hey, I'm doing a great work right here, and I cannot come down. Why don't you say that with me? Let's say it out loud together. Here we go. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Say it with me again. I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. One more time. I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. So here's the thing. There's something in your life right now, there's something, some wall in your world that you need to climb up on and complete. There's something, some, you know, there's one thing that you need to climb up on in your life right now, one task, one project that needs to be finished, one habit that you need to get a handle on, you know, one relationship that needs to be ended, or so whatever it might be, you know, and you need to stay with Nehemiah right here today. Hey, I'm doing a great work right here in my vocation, in my marriage, with my kids. You know, whatever it is, I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. See, Nehemiah, he said this to Sanballat, to the messenger. And they didn't give up. In fact, here's the rest of his response. Nehemiah's like, you know, why should I stop my work? I mean, this is an important thing that I'm doing right now. Why should I stop my work and come down and have lunch with you? You know, come down here and get distracted with, how is me meeting with you, Sanballat, going to actually help me complete the wall, make progress on the wall? Story continues, verse 4. It says, they sent messengers to me 4 times in this manner, and I answered them in the same way. And so he sent another message. He's like, hey, come on, Nehemiah. Okay, let's get your people and my people together. Let's get our calendars together. Surely you're not on the wall 24-7. Whenever you're down off the wall, let's go out to the plain of Ono. Let's hook up for coffee. Let's get together. You know, let's just do dinner together. And every time Nehemiah got the message, he said back to Sanballat, I'm doing a good work right here. Why would I come off the wall? What is meeting with you going to do to help me accomplish this thing in my life? And here's why this is so significant for us. See, if Nehemiah would have come off the wall and would have met with Sanballat, if he would have got outside the city gates, Sanballat and his men would have killed him immediately. They would have killed him. Did you know that there are things in your life, there are things in my life, that if we don't complete them, if we don't focus on them, if we don't deal with them, they have the potential to take. I mean, there are things relationally in your life right now that if you don't attend to, that have the potential to destroy, or to use Nehemiah's term up there a moment ago, to kill your marriage. There are things going on right now that have the potential to kill your relationship with your kids. There are things in your life that have the potential to kill your future relationships way down the road with your grandchildren. So there are things going on in your life right now that have the potential to actually, you know, to physically kill you. Maybe there's a health concern going on in your life right now. You know, maybe your doctor said, hey, here's the steps you need to take, and there's challenges. And every time you hear that concern, you're like, oh, I'll be okay. And you've changed doctors, and you've changed prescriptions, and you know, your husband or your wife brings it up, and every time they bring it up, you're like, oh, I don't want to hear any more about it, I'll be just fine. And you come to church every weekend, and you sit here. We love seeing you, by the way. We love that. You come in here, get all happy, clappy, and get excited, and yet you're ignoring a fundamental thing, a fundamental something going on in your life that you're not paying attention to that literally might take your life. You say, well, Kirk, come on. I mean, those aren't spiritual things. Those aren't physical things. Those aren't like church things. I remember one of my professors, Dr. Fred. I had a professor called Dr. Fred. And he was just kind of one of those off-the-cuff, you never get what you expect out of him. And I'll never forget, he said something effective. I've never met somebody with a physical ministry, a spiritual ministry that didn't have a physical body. Wow, he's pretty right on that. You kind of have to have a body to be able to do anything, right? So, I mean, you know, if you're dealing with a health thing, you need to take care of that. You take care of your body. It's God's desire for you. And we all know what our wall is. Doesn't take us long to figure out what our wall is. Question is, are we paying attention to what we need to be addressing? For some of you as parents, listen, I've got 4 young kids at home, 3 young kids and 1 older one. And you know, there's some things there, you know, that maybe you need to go home tonight, and when you're putting your kids down after they've just fallen asleep, you need to sit on the side of your bed, of their bed, you know, whether it's an infant or a toddler or, you know, elementary kid, right after they fall. So just go in there and put your hand on their shoulder or run it through their hair and look at them, and you need to say these words right. You need to say out loud, I am doing a great work right here. I cannot come down. I mean, there's a lot of things I could do. There's a lot of things that I could be involved with. There's, you know, a lot of things that I could give my time to, but in this stage of my life, I'm doing a great work right here. Listen, in our house, we have one of our oldest is almost a teenager. She's in like the pre-teenage years. Man, that's a whole different story than kids, right? And I used to be a youth pastor, and I thought I knew teenagers until I became a parent. And now I'm thinking all the stuff I used to tell parents is like out the window. It's like, I don't know how good I was, because, you know, this is hard work. And listen, if you have teenagers at home, you need to do the same thing. Tonight, you might need to go into their room after they're asleep. You may have to set your alarm so you can get up later in the middle of the night, because they may be asleep, you know, you may be asleep before you. But when they're asleep, you need to go into the room and say out loud. You're going to walk in there like I did the other night, and you're going to look at your kid, and you're going to be like, how did they get so big? I mean, I walked in my daughter, and I'm like, how is she so long? She's almost as long as the bed. You know, you need to put your hand on their shoulder after they're asleep, and you need to say, this is the greatest work I have right here. I am doing a great work. I cannot come off the wall. Right? Well, what I'm investing in the future right here. I mean, this kid right here is going to do something beyond what I've ever done. This kid's going to outlive me. My greatest work right now is with this child. And I can't come off the wall. You know, for some of us, you know, men, specifically, that picture you have of your wife sitting on the corner of your desk, or that you carry around on your smartphone or your dumb phone. Dumb phones can even have pictures on them. And so, you know, you need to look at that picture. When you look at that picture, you need to say, I am doing a great work. I cannot come off the wall. I mean, yeah, there's more trips I could take. There's another promotion I could chase after. You know, there's another job I could look at that's going to take me out of town 2 or 3 more nights a week. I mean, yeah, I could look at being busier and busier and busier, but I'm doing a great work right here, and I cannot come off. Ladies, when you look at your husbands, I don't know what you say when you look at your husbands. I got stuck here first. I don't know if you're like, wow, that's a piece of work right there. I don't know if you're like, man, he needs a lot of help. I don't know, because I didn't really ask my wife what she thought when she looked at me before I got up here. But, you know, here's the thing. You know the significant role you play with your husbands. You know that. And it's so easy to get distracted off. You need to look at your husband and say, I'm doing a great work. Great work, and I need to stay on the wall. See, college students, youth, you know, teenagers, we got a handful of you in the room today, you know, you know that you're smart, man. You know the critical things, the things that will help you, you know, be really successful, and the things in your life going on that are going to cause you to end in disaster. You know those things, all right? You know what the breach is for you. I mean, even though you're 13 or 15 or 20 or 22, you know the breach. And once you know what that is, you have a responsibility to say, hey, I'm doing a good work right here, and I can't come off the wall. Right? That's cute over there. It's really, really cute, but I got to stay on the wall. All right? I mean, yeah, I'd love to hang out with you guys, but that's got to wait till next year. All right? You know what the breach is. All right, you know what your conscience is telling you. You know in your heart, maybe what God's put on your heart to say, hey, here's what my life's to be about, and this thing over here looks really, really good, but I've got to stay on the wall. See, the challenge for us isn't figuring out what the one thing is. We know the one thing. The challenge is, will we stay on the wall and complete the good work, complete whatever it is that's in front of us? Here's how the story is. In fact, Nehemiah. You know, he couldn't come down off the wall. He wouldn't come down off the wall. But that didn't discourage, you know, his enemies. And so what they tried to do, they were starting rumors. They were, you know, hoping that these rumors that Nehemiah was trying to build up Jerusalem to be a powerhouse in the world stage would get back to King Artaxerxes. And then Nehemiah would have to leave the wall to go back and explain himself to King Artaxerxes. And that didn't work. I mean, Nehemiah just shook his head. He's like, I don't care. I've got something to do right here. You know, King of Persia, King Artaxerxes, he knows my heart. I don't have to go explain myself. I've got to stay on the wall. And when that didn't work, even one of Nehemiah's friends, or somebody he thought was a friend, a guy by the name of Shemaiah, he came to Nehemiah, and he's like, Nehemiah, do you understand that you even have enemies right here in Jerusalem? Do you understand that there are people who have been financially benefiting from the fact that the walls and the city has been in rubble, and they've been, you know, charging incredibly high interest rates to the people of Jerusalem, and now they're not going to be able to charge those because the city's being restored? Do you realize that there are people in the surrounding regions that can't come in here and steal and pillage? They're wanting to kill you in your sleep. And here's what his friend said to him. He said, Nehemiah, you need to come off the wall, and you need to run to the temple and cling to the altar. And here's what that meant. It was kind of this weird cultural thing that was going on, that somebody who had a call out for their life, that was going to be killed, had a call for their life, that if they would go to the temple and cling to the altar, then that guaranteed them a fair trial. So it was like this legalese thing that his friend was throwing in. And you know, Nehemiah said the same thing. He said, man, I'm doing a good work here. He said, there's nothing. These are just distractions. I can't calm down. I don't care what rumors are going on. I don't care, you know, what threats are going on around here. I don't care what the king of Persia thinks at this point. He said, I don't care if somebody's going to come murder me. I gotta stay on the wall. And eventually, Nehemiah finishes the wall. Here's how the author puts it in the story. He says, so the wall was completed on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, the entire ancient city of Jerusalem. Now, understand, they didn't build the wall around the entire ancient city as it had originally stood. It was like a portion of the city of Jerusalem. But understand this, a wall of protection over the core city of Jerusalem in 52 days. And look at what it said. It said, when all of our enemies, this is amazing right here, when all of our enemies heard of it, and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. And what's interesting in this story is there were no miracles. I mean, they didn't wake up one morning and they're like 75% done, and they wake up and like, whoa, God showed up and finished the last 25%. I mean, God wasn't like throwing lightning bolts at the enemies while they're trying to pick the workers off on the wall. I mean, there was none of that that took place. I mean, there was no supernatural elements in this story right here. This was just a bunch of men and women who realized there's something that needs to be done, and it needs to be done now. It needs to be done now. And God honored their hard work. God honored Nehemiah's leadership. At the end of the day, you know what everybody understood what we just read right there? Was that even the enemies were standing there saying, wow, look at Nehemiah. Something's going on right here that bears the thumbprint of God all over. And I don't know where this lands for you, where this story lands as you think about your one thing, the story of Nehemiah. I can tell you for me, I stand here and I think, you know, at the end of this year, 12 months from now, I want my wife, I want my kids saying, man, look at Dad. Look at her, man. Her bears the thumbprint of God doing something in his life, man. My friends to look at me and say, you know, Kurt, man, God's been doing something because you were getting after that one thing. And I can tell that God's all over that thing. So the question is, you know, do we want to be in that place? And if we can be in a different place 12 months from now, 6 months from now, like it can start right now. And so I don't know where this falls for you, but I want to ask you to process through a few things. On the back of your connection card that Eric walked us through this morning are some next steps. I want you to take that out and raise the house lights a little bit. Recommend. And now there's a few next steps here. I'm not going to walk you through them. The one I really want to move to steer you towards is the second one. It says, I will stay on my wall. And there's a blank. A place for you to identify what your wall is. What's that thing that needs attention? It's that one thing. But if you can say I can change this one thing this year, my life will be an entirely new place. And I encourage you to write it down. There's something about writing it down. It's almost declaring and saying, God, I invite you in to begin this process with me. So PJ's going to sing a song here about change, about, you know, the struggles we have with change. And as you listen to the words, I just process through these next steps. Process through what your one thing might be. If you're ready to get after it. You may have been distracted. Maybe you've done this 100 times. You've already failed at the new year. Listen, this isn't about a once and out thing. This is about saying, how can I do everything possible to stay on the wall? How can I make this my one thing that I know will take my relationships, my life, to an entirely new place? Invite God in. Thank you.